Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, you guys. This is Say Your Peace Radio Network. You guys, I'm having some tea, guys. Hold on. Oh, okay. Hold up. Now. Anyway, I would like to say I'm sorry, you guys. I'm having some feedback, and I don't know where it's coming from. But anyway, this is Through the Eyes of the Black Woman, and we are here tonight. As you know, this month is Women's History Month, and we're celebrating Women's History Month. And tonight, our featured guest is Aisha Patterson out of Gary, Indiana, and she has her own consulting firm. And what I want her to do is to tell me the name of her consulting firm and tell us a little bit about herself.
Okay, so thanks for having me, Shalita, first off. I really appreciate
it. You're welcome.
So the name of my business is pretty simple. It's Aisha R. Patterson Consulting. So it should be pretty easy to remember if you know my name. And so as far as telling a little bit about myself, I was at Best Buy for 19 years. I worked my way up from a part-time cashier to being responsible for almost 400 employees across 13 states as the Great Lakes Region Service Manager. So I really enjoyed that. But a little bit over a year ago, I decided to leave Best Buy, and when I left is when I decided to start my own consulting and coaching business. My goals are to help individuals elevate their careers through coaching and on the business side, help entrepreneurs either start their business or grow their business and to also steer larger businesses toward workforce development and growth and encouraging employee satisfaction. I'm really big on employee engagement.
Okay, now, you said you left. How long were you at Best Buy?
I was at Best Buy for a little over 19 years.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Woo, so it was half my life.
Yeah.
Man. And now you're free. Year later, you are free. You can do what you want and get up when you want to, talk to people when you want to. You know, you can't beat that, huh?
No, it's definitely a completely different experience. But, you know, as you know, as an entrepreneur, you actually probably work a little harder when you're working for yourself than when you work for another company. I do get to call the shots, so you can't beat that.
Exactly. I was talking to another interviewee. I can't remember who it was, and I was telling her how now when you come out of college, they're saying that when you come out of college as a student, fresh out of college, that you start your own business, you're more successful and you're going to stay in the game longer than if you wait and work for somebody else. I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah,
so
I can believe that.
They're gearing a lot of college students now to start their own business. Don't come out preparing yourself to work for somebody for 20 or 30 years and hope your retirement be enough for you to live off of. They want you to come out and start your own business and be your own boss. But, you know, they don't teach that. They don't push that in a lot of curriculums, and even in high school, in school period, on how to be a business owner. They train us and they teach us and they educate us in a way of working for someone else. And anybody who steps out of the box, I cheer them completely on all the way to the finish line.
Yeah.
It is a great feeling. I know it is a great feeling not to have to answer to nobody. And not everybody, some people are not meant to be bosses. Some people are not meant to own their own business. Some people like working for other people. You have those type of people, I'm satisfied, I don't want to do anything. I'm glad where I'm at. You know, that's good and dandy, but everybody's not like that. I don't want nobody standing over my shoulder all the time.
There has to be a balance when it comes to the education system. So, like you said, some people when they graduate from high school, they know that they don't want to work for someone. But again, there are others who, because it takes a lot of focus and a lot of determination and persistence to become an entrepreneur. So that's not always, always a viable choice either. So it's just a matter of, you know, trying to make sure you figure out what works best for you and then make your choices that way. And even when you're going towards a career, when you're looking for a career and you do want to work for a particular company, then you need to, you know, find the job or the role that fits your personality so that you can make it your career, make it more than just a job. Because, you know, we spend a lot of our lives working, and you want to be doing something that's exciting to you. So you want to make sure that you understand what you're good at, what your skills are, and then applying them in the best way for you.
Exactly, exactly. Now, when we come to a point where we want to make that decision, and the people that come to me, the feedback that I get is, I don't have enough money to start my own business. I don't think I should do it. I better not, you know. They come up with a lot of excuses, but they want to be able to do it. But, you know, you hear all these obstacles. And what I find myself, I wrote a book simply dealing with us and our stumbling blocks and how we allow them to get in our way when they don't have to be in our way. And those stumbling blocks can be anything. It could be you could be your own stumbling block. Your friends, your family, even the job that you're at now can be a stumbling block from you to think that you have enough courage to move on and do this. It's not for everybody, and we've explained that. But if you think it's for you, you need to start putting your plan together. My girlfriend always say, make a plan and work that plan. And learn how to work it. And the way I did it, I didn't even use none of the skills I know now and the stuff that I know now.
Right.
Just did.
Well, some people, you know, don't necessarily feel comfortable jumping out there on their own. And I'm a planner by nature. So I definitely, that's one of the things I coach is, you know, start off with a plan, whether you're actually still working for a company and thinking about quitting at some point, or if you're, you know, already out on your own, you still need a really, really solid plan. And it doesn't have to necessarily be the conventional business plan that, you know, you learn about in school, because, you know, usually that might only be necessary, you know, if you're trying to get an investor or get a loan from a bank or something like that. So even if you don't want to go that route, just having a solid plan and a solid vision for where you want to go is an excellent start. But I think the other thing is, you know, asking the right people. So if you aren't getting support from your family and loved ones or your friends and things like that, then, you know, join some networking groups and, you know, where other people are in the same boat and they can kind of help guide you along and, you know, and help you in that regard. So I agree with you 100%.
You said something that I'm not too well at, and I'll tell anybody. I had sent somebody a message saying, I need some help to organize. My hands in so many cookie jars to is pitiful. It's like I'm sticking all this stuff in my mouth, and I'm not really tasting it. I'm just eating it.
Yeah.
And I said, I need some help. I feel like I'm overwhelmed with so much stuff, and I said, I need to organize myself. I need to plan stuff. And I can honestly say I'm not a good planner. I can coordinate stuff for other people, but for myself, I am crappy with it. I am terrible.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, most people run into. You know, not everybody is a good planner, or some people think that creating a plan limits your flexibility, and it doesn't have to. So sometimes that intimidates people from even sitting down to write a plan. So I completely get that, but it is really important to, you know, at least have some kind of blueprint about where you want to go. And you know, like you mentioned, you have your hands in so many different things, and that may be because you don't have a plan, so you kind of just do whatever's in front of you right then.
Exactly.
And in some cases, I'm not saying, of course, not necessarily for you, but in some cases, if you don't have a plan, it can take you so far off your course of where you really want it to be, and you'll look up, you know, 10 years from now, and, you know, you're like, okay, this is not what I wanted to be doing at this point in my life, but you never really sat down and had a good plan for yourself to make sure that you stayed on course.
Okay, so you trying to talk about me?
No, not at all, not at all. but you're just saying what a lot of people feel.
Are you trying to talk about me? Yeah. My feet, look how you say, you're stepping all over my toes. Why you got to step on my toe? You know, that's fighting words when you step on my toe now. You know I got to fight now. But, you know what, you are so right. Because lack of planning, I'm at that point. I'm 2 years down the road. I voluntarily resigned from my job,
mm-hmm.
and I came to a point, it was really something mental I had to do. I was under a lot of stress. So I,
yeah.
And now I'm doing this, and I've got my hands, and I'm literally not lying to you. I have my hands in probably about 6 different things going on right now. But I've got to find a way to organize each thing. I'm in school. Now, believe it or not, I'm in school.
Okay.
I've got 4 different businesses I'm trying to do at the same time.
Okay, wow.
That's not good.
Well, it's not bad, though, either. It's just a matter of, especially if those things are your passion and that's
yes.
what you really want to go after, then
yes.
it's not bad to have that many, you know, balls in the air and, you know, and trying to manage all of that. It's just a matter of having a plan for each one of those things. You can, you know, split it out and work on, you know, give it, so you should have 4 different businesses, you know, so give them, you know, each 20% of your time. Or if one is a bigger passion than the other, or if it's further along than the other, then maybe you want to focus on that and put the others on the back burner. You don't have to give them up. But it really depends on what you want your end result to be, on how you go after it. You know, if you want to spend equal time on each of them, that's fine. But if you want to, you know, put one in front of the other 3 or 4, that's okay too. It's just, you just have to decide what you want to do and then go
that's
ahead and do it that way. What you want to do.
You said something that is so excellent, so well said, went in my head, heard it, put it in my brain, soaked it up. But it's like it's hard for me to make the decision on what I really, truly want to concentrate. Like you said, find the ones that you have a lot of passion for, and you put them where you can put them. And then the other one, maybe you do need to put on a back burner. But the thing is, I tried to put it on the back burner, but it's still sitting there because ideals for that situation or that business will come to my head. Oh, well, let me pull it back out and start working on it. So I have all these different things going on in my head at the same time, all these great ideas, and I don't know how to organize them.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand exactly what you're saying. You're the exact type of entrepreneur that I work with, and I basically call them
people.
What you're
talking about? Is this free consultation? Hold up. Excuse me, Ms. Patterson. Is this a free consultation? Because if we got to pay for it, let's get off the line, let's get off the radio, and make some. But I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Right. No, I totally get where you're coming from, Selena. You are hilarious. But I work with because creative people are always coming up with excellent ideas, but it's a matter of, you know, corralling those ideas and then making them into something productive. And those are the exact types of entrepreneurs that I work with, are those with an excellent idea, and they either aren't sure where they want to go or, you know, aren't sure where they want to focus. And, you know, my suggestion to you, and I'm not saying this because I am a coach, but sometimes that helps, getting a coach, because they can hold you accountable to what you say you want your vision, you know, what your vision is. They can hold you accountable to that. And so when you do kind of, you know, see that rabbit off to the side and say, oh, but I can do this, they can say, okay, wait a minute, Selena, you said you wanted to do this, this, and this. Is that your priority, or have you changed priorities? And sometimes it's just always helpful to have that person who knows what your vision is to kind of keep you in line.
Okay. All right. I got you. Okay. All right. So now that you've told me that, made me feel a little bit better to a certain extent. I still need to know if I need to send my credit card number to you or something. If I need to do that, just let me know.
Okay.
Work something out.
We'll discuss that offline.
Oh, no. Do you take layaway? Oh, boy. Okay, Felicia, be serious now. Okay. Now. Okay, people who have their own businesses, let's talk about the pitfalls, the ups and downs of being an entrepreneur. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the ups first.
Okay. Yeah, so as we discussed before, one of the biggest ups is just the flexibility of call, you know, being able to call your own shots, and you know, again, you get to set the vision and go after it. When I was working for Best Buy, you know, Best Buy, the company and the division that I worked in had its own vision, and as a manager for them, I had to implement that vision.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, being an entrepreneur, I get to determine what I want my vision to be and go after it as far as that's concerned. And then just the, whether you have a product or a service, just that feeling of helping someone get what they need, whether it's filling a need with a particular product that you may make or retail, or for me, since I provide services, just that feeling of knowing that you contributed to someone else's business getting off the ground because of the advice that I gave. There's, you know, that's a huge reward and a great feeling to have as far as being an entrepreneur. So those are a couple of the upsides to it. You know, your time is a little more flexible. Like I said, you do work harder. You know, I read a quote the other day that says that entrepreneurs are willing to work 80 hours just so they don't have to work 40 hours for someone else. And I think that's a, you know, a very true statement. So, you know, I completely get it. And but again, it's rewarding because it's your own. It's your baby. You get to, you know, see it sink or swim. You know, but you have complete control over it.
Now, what's the downside?
The downsides are, again, you know, it's that, it's the instability of, you know, not necessarily knowing where your next, you know, revenue stream is going to come from. You know, you're a little more affected by swings in the economy and things like that, where, you know, if you work for a bigger company, it may affect you at some point in a bigger company, because even when I was working for Best Buy, you know, we did layoffs and things like that, so you could be affected. But, you
sure
know, you feel it. But you feel it a lot quicker, I think, as an entrepreneur. And I think the other thing is, like, so when I worked for Best Buy, you know, I was responsible for a pretty big area and a lot of employees, but I had assistant managers that worked for me. So they, you know, I had managers for each department. When you're an entrepreneur, you're the manager of every department. And you still, you have, even though it's not a department that has a bunch of employees that works for it, there's still, you know, you still have to do administrative work. You still have to go out and actually do some selling and getting clients, or, you know, getting new customers. You still have to do advertising. You still have to do all of those things, and you can't hand that off to someone else if you're an entrepreneur. So that makes it a lot tougher, you know, too. And, like I said, I had seven managers that worked for me, so there was a lot of stuff that I could hand off, and, you know, I got kind of spoiled with that. And now that I'm an entrepreneur, it's like, okay, Aisha, yeah, you'll be doing that yourself.
Can you do this? And then you look around, okay, she's not there. I guess I'll have to do it myself.
Exactly. So, you know, so aside from the, you know, the economic instability that can happen sometimes, it's that, you know, that feeling of being overwhelmed because there is a lot to do. And, you know, you can hire employees to do it, but, you know, not all entrepreneurs are in that, you know, are, can afford that. So a lot of times you end up doing a lot yourself.
Yeah, you have to. Now, you know what I find to do, too, also, to help you out some? I don't know if you've heard of Fiverr.com?
Yeah.
Okay. Sometimes they can help you out, and it's another company that I worked with on the side that I did a couple of, like, I did some commercials for, voiceover commercials for them, for a guy who was doing a meditation video. He needed some help with that. And I did some of that for him. So that was, like, extra. That helped him out with his business. But it also helped me out because, you know what, it put a couple of dollars in my pocket. You can hire them, even though they're temporary. You can hire temporary staff.
Right, yep. Yeah, there are definitely plenty of opportunities and avenues that you can go down so that it doesn't have to get overwhelming. And, you know, and the other thing that I'm finding out, especially as a consultant, is that a lot of people don't understand how important it is to invest in your business. by possibly getting a consultant or someone who can actually help you. You know, nowadays with technology being the way it is, you can look up a lot of different ways to do things that you may, you know, may not have gone to school to do or, you know, may not have any experience doing. But in some cases, you know, it might be a very easy do-it-yourself type thing. But in other cases, you are starting from scratch and you have to learn how to do it, and it could take months to really get good at it or whatever. And in those cases, some kind of consultant or someone who provides those services, yeah, it may be, you know, money on the front end, but it'll get you to where you need to be a lot quicker, where you are generating an income and can afford to pay that. And that's one of the struggles that I have as a consultant, of getting people, you know, they understand they need my services, but they don't want to invest that money to actually, you know, to pay for the services.
Okay,
so
now,
that's always a challenge.
Yeah, I can imagine. Being a consultant now, being a consultant, doing the things that you do, do you offer them incentives when it comes to what your program is set up to do?
Yeah, so you mean incentives like referrals or, you know, if they sign up for a certain amount of time? Yeah, so I do things like that.
Yeah, whatever you consider to bring your money in, you know, because, you know, everybody's just not always going to be able to outright. Some people need to be pushed a little bit or maneuvered or manipulated or whatever you want to call it.
it's a matter of, you know, being able to convince them in the way that they understand how you can help them. And that's one of the biggest things I learned going from working at Best Buy to being in business for myself is, you know, I was not a salesperson. When I worked for Best Buy, I was always in customer service or in operations and things like that, and I never wanted to be on the sales floor when I worked in retail because, you know, that was a lot of convincing people to, you know, make purchases. And now that I'm an entrepreneur, that is my job, is convincing people that, you know, helping them understand how I can help them and why it will help them in the long run to utilize my business. So that was a big learning for me as, you know, as I've stepped from one career to a new career.
Mm-hmm. Now, have you done any, like, seminars, conferences,
I'm working on that now. I'm going to, this spring, I'll be starting workshops and things like that because I know that that's another way to actually help people on. Mm-hmm. Yep. So, yeah, I started my business late last year, and like I said, I'm a planner, so at the beginning of 2013, figured out what I needed to do differently, how I could get out there more and get more exposure and things like that. So doing workshops and speaking engagements and things like that are part of what is going to get me the exposure that I'm looking for. So.
Okay. Now, do you keep in contact or do you network with other consultants that are doing what you're doing?
Yes, actually I do. So one of the first things I did when I went into business for myself was to join different networking groups just to, be around, like I was saying before, get around people who support, who are in the same boat so they understand what you're going through.
Yes. Yeah.
And that helped me kind of narrow down my niche as a consultant because there's a lot of things I can help business people with because I learned so much in my 19 years at Best Buy, and I want to take that and help entrepreneurs and small business owners with those types of things. But then there are still things that are outside my skill set or that I'm either not interested in or don't have the experience to do. So I'm not a marketing person. I'm not a public relations person. So I make sure that in my network I have people that do those things and have complementary skills to mine so that when I have a client that gets to the point where they need a marketing person, then I've been working with someone that I know can help them.
Mm-hmm. So you've created your own little referral system, in other words.
Exactly. And I think that is cute. I'm not trying to hog all the business to myself. I want to help the clients with what they need. And if I can't provide those services for them, then I want to point them in the right direction.
And that's the way entrepreneurs are supposed to support each other. You heard I said supposed to. Not everybody wants to share the wealth. Because you have a lot of entrepreneurs and they wonder why they're not successful. Well, because you're sitting on all that great information that you can share with other entrepreneurs, or y'all could partnership up on something, a project, and both of y'all can make the money off of it.
Right.
And it's a lot of us, we don't want to share. We don't want everybody to know what I do. It's a secret. How did you get that information? Well, what I did was, oh, girl, I'll tell you. I can't tell you. But I did it. I did it. I'm sorry. It's not your information to hold on to anyway. You didn't pay for it.
Exactly. And, you know, and the bottom line is there's plenty out there for everyone. You know, there's only one Aisha that can do what Aisha does, and then there's someone else who does something different. And, you know, that's what I rely on is, especially, like I said, that's another thing that I learned becoming an entrepreneur is I am my own brand. I am my own product. So I need to be out there and speaking to people and showing my personality and making sure that we're a good fit. You know, I'm not trying to work with everyone. I want to work with the people that are, are compatible personality-wise, but also that, you know, realize how I can help them. And there's plenty out there for everyone.
Another thing, too, while you were saying, I was just going through my head. Was, there it go again, my head just spinning with stuff in it. I was thinking, I have a friend of mine who is an author that she just started her own entrepreneur academy, literally got her own academy set up where she's teaching. And I don't know if she's consulting, but I know she started her own. She's the director and founder of her own, Entrepreneur Academy. So she teaches you how to start your business. You go through different classes and stuff. And I was thinking, man, let me see where she is. I don't think she's in Texas and you're in Indiana.
Okay.
Maybe y'all could network, you know, and maybe y'all could, you know, because I'm quite sure she probably have people that she works with. But I think you should, you know, if you could, you know, just kind of network all over the place. Don't necessarily be just in the town you live in or the state you live in. You can go out, because you might know something that you've learned since you've been doing it that somebody else doesn't know.
I agree.
Sharing the wealth is, to me, I think is an awesome thing. My problem is I'm always giving advice. I'm always helping people, but I don't ask for money for
it. You have to be careful about that, and that's the other thing I learned as an entrepreneur, that what I learned at Best Buy, like I said, I can help so many businesses avoid some of the pitfalls and some of the mistakes that I saw that were made at Best Buy, that a company that big can't afford to make some of the mistakes that they made. A smaller company that may end up making some of those same mistakes, it could put them out of business. So that was, you know, why I was so passionate about going into consulting and trying to, you know, help small businesses avoid those pitfalls. But, I just lost my train of thought. I am so sorry. But
that's all right. I do it all the time.
But, you know, just sharing that knowledge and making sure that that people are willing to listen and, you know, people who know that they need help are very easy customers usually, because, you know, they understand what they need. It's a little tougher when people don't realize that they need help. But like we're saying, as far as, you know, one of my goals is to become national and, you know, and be able to, you know, right now I work in the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland area. But you know,
that's
I do want
area.
To expand. Yeah, I do want to expand. You know, that part of that was, I'm putting the finishing touches on my first book, which is called The Subtle Shark. And I plan on doing a series of books.
Hold up. Let me write this down.
Okay.
Now, what'd you say? What's the name of it is?
The Subtle Shark.
The Subtle Shark.
Subtle, yes. As in, you know, kind of easygoing, laid back, subtle.
Okay.
Yes.
Ah. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So, like I said, it's the first in a series of three books, and it's autobiographical, but from a career standpoint.
Okay.
So the first book, the Subtle Shark book, is about, you know, like I mentioned, I worked for Best Buy for 19 years, and I started out as a part-time cashier.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time I left, I was responsible for, you know, almost 400 employees. So
mm-hmm.
and it didn't happen by accident. I was
mm-hmm.
very methodical in my approach, and
yes.
But I did it in a way that's not stereotypical of people who achieve some of the things that I've achieved. You know, I'm not, you know, extremely aggressive. I'm not, you know, I'm not an in-your-face kind of person. I'm not overly, what's the word?
Stab you in the back type of person.
Well, I'm definitely not a stab-in-the-back type of person. But
step on the next person to get where I need to go type person.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, all of those some of those negative stereotypes, even though they're positive people that get to where they want to, you know, they achieve. But sometimes you think you have to be extremely aggressive. You have to step over people to get what you want. And that's never been my personality. But I was able to continually move up, you know, and every time it was a bigger and better position, and it wasn't about the title or anything, but once I mastered what I had learned in whatever my current position was, then I set my
mm-hmm.
eye on something more. I always wanted to be challenged. And, you know, I'm a pretty easygoing person, and, you know, I'm about my business, and, you know, if things are going wrong, you know, I'm going to let people know. But I'm not that overly, you know, assertive person that's in people's faces to get things done. And so I just wanted to kind of chronicle that and show the things and the people that inspired me over my journey and hopefully inspire people who may think that they have to have that kind of tenacious personality to be able to move forward. And I proved that you don't have to. And so maybe that'll inspire some people who think you have to do that to be able to get ahead and realize that you really don't have to. So,
but you know what? They push that. You know, Aisha, they push that. They push that attitude. You know that.
Yeah. And, you know, but what I did, and to be quite honest, I got pushed sometimes to by some managers that I reported to. I got pushed to be who I wasn't sometimes. And one of the things I learned probably about halfway through my journey at Best Buy was that it's okay to push back as long as you do it respectfully.
Mm-hmm.
So there were times where I would, you know, if my manager told me to do something, I would go ahead and do it even if I didn't agree with it. Or, and, you know, I never did anything unethical or immoral, but sometimes there were things that, you know, kind of skirted that line a little bit. And it took certain experiences, which I'm writing about in the book. It took certain experiences for me to say, you know what, I should have stood my ground. You know, in that particular situation, it probably would have had a different outcome, but I should have stood my ground. So the next time something like that happened, I stood my ground, and I've succeeded. So and sometimes when you're coming up, and, you know, I was, you know, young when I started at Best Buy, so I didn't know a lot about those type of politics and that type of stuff. So, you know, sometimes I got burned, and, you know, and I learned the next time. So I always learn something from a painful experience that I may have gone through, and it's okay to challenge authority as long as you do it respectfully. You know, sometimes people just tell you what to do based off of how they would do it, but if it's not in your personality or if you think that there's a different way to do it, then speak up and say that, and, you know, and ask them, you know, can I get a chance to try this my way? And a lot of people, you would be surprised at who, like I said, people are sometimes intimidated by their bosses and things like that. But bosses respect when you speak up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I know there's a lot of people that are scared of their boss. You got to think about the mentality. You're in Indiana, and you look at this is Louisiana. So the mentality, you guys are probably more in your face type with your bosses without being disrespectful, opposed to people down here allowing the bosses to let them know where they belong. And I'm going to say it like it is, belong.
Mm-hmm.
And I have issues with that.
Yeah, well, you should.
But a lot of people don't. And I find myself fighting their battle because they won't speak up. And after a while, you know, and then they'll leave you out to dry.
Yep.
Or
yeah, that's,
leave you out hang when you fought a battle for them. So I had to learn how to, and that's one of my weaknesses, I had to learn how to pull myself back out of people's situations. situations lots of times because I find myself trying to fix it. Yeah. I can fix it. Just let me fix it. So they have that attitude where, oh, no, man, I'm scared I'm going to lose my job if I tell my boss. But your boss is doing this to you. Do you understand what your boss is doing to you? That is not right. Of course,
right.
You did this. No, I ain't going to say that's all right. I ain't going to say nothing. Go ahead. I said, okay. But then you coming to me and telling me about it, you don't want me to do anything, or you don't want to take the step to make something happen, then you're looking at me. So I had to learn how to step back. And,
That's a very important lesson that you have, because like you said, you're speaking up for someone else, and then when the chips are down, then they kind of leave you hanging. And, and from a professional standpoint, so I was on the side, you know, I was an employee for, you know, quite a while, and then I became a manager, and so I had people reporting to me. And one of the things, and I write a weekly blog and try to teach leadership skills to both sides of it, what employees are responsible for and what people in management positions should be responsible for. And one of the, a blog that I wrote a couple months ago, I talked about when employees used to bring me issues that weren't their issue. It was they were speaking on behalf of someone else. And only if it was a dangerous situation would I get involved. Otherwise, I would tell them, you know what, I do not deal in third-party conversations. So if this person is really having a problem, then they need to come to me themselves. I'm not going to do anything based off of you telling me that this is how someone else feels.
Exactly.
Yeah, and you know, because you're an adult. Speak up, and it amazes me how some people are much more willing or fearful, whatever you want to call it. That you know, they'll stay in a bad situation because they don't want to speak up or are fearful of what may happen to them. But you know, there are laws in place now to protect you from that type of stuff.
Even though some of the laws don't work. But they are there. See, I used to work for the federal government, so I have a whole different agenda, and I have a whole different mindset of how these laws, quote unquote, are supposed to work for you.
Yeah.
When you whistleblow, it's called reprisal. Oh no, we didn't do anything to her. We promise you, we didn't do it. And you wonder why you're working in the basement. Okay. You know, you were way up here, now you're working in the basement.
Right, yeah.
I get it. It's a whole different aspect. But, so, okay, you said something earlier, and I'm yammering, and I should have been listening to everything you were saying. You said something about the pitfalls that some businesses find themselves in. Let's talk about the pitfalls big businesses find themselves in and the small businesses. What are their pitfalls and what is the difference in them?
So one of the biggest pitfalls for a big business is that some businesses grow so fast that, you know, the founders of the company may have certain values that they want instilled and a certain culture that they want followed or, you know, certain objectives that they want met. But if the company is growing so quickly or the company is just big itself, then it's hard to keep up to make sure that those things are actually happening. So, for example, when I was working for Best Buy, and there would be initiatives that came out of, you know, how you were supposed to do employees' appraisals and doing what we called one-on-ones with your employees and talking to them about their career development, talking to them about how they were performing in their job before you got to the annual review. You're supposed to talk to your employees at least at a minimum of four times a year, not just that one time. And so that was a directive that, you know, came down from corporate. But I had so many employees that transferred into my locations from other locations, and when we were doing it, when we were doing the one-on-ones and the quarterly reviews and that type of stuff, they were surprised.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they all work for the same company. They all work for Best Buy, but when they transferred to my location, it was like, okay, well, my managers never did this. So you can lose track of those types of things, and clearly if it was important enough for the powers that be at the top to make it a directive, then that meant that we should all be doing it. And mm-hmm. but some people were and some people weren't. So it's so much harder to kind of keep track of everything that's going on. And mm-hmm. when employees act up or do things that may be detrimental to the company, you know, nobody remembers the employee's name that did that particular thing. It may show up in the news. They just remember it was Best Buy. So, you know, those types of things, they're so hard to keep track of. But sometimes it's the inner workings of the company itself that causes that problem. So if mm-hmm. the powers that be put the objectives in place, like I said, for instance, for the quarterly one-on-ones, but nobody is ever checking up to make sure that it's being done, then, then it's just as much corporate's fault that it's not happening as it is the people who aren't doing it. So there's a lot of follow-up that's required. So I just saw a lot of things that as a company we were supposed to be doing that individual locations or individual teams or, you know, things like that didn't follow through on. And those types of things kind of erode from the company and cause employee dissatisfaction, cause customer dissatisfaction. It causes those types of things. And mm-hmm. that's one of the things that when I'm coaching small businesses is even if you're an entrepreneur, make sure that you know what you want your culture to be, even if it's just you now. You know, all of us, it may be just us now, but at some point we probably want to grow and start adding employees and things like that. So think about what you want your culture and your vision and all of that to be now so that when you start growing, you can attract the right people who can make sure that that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's too hard to go backwards and undo things and then try to do it the right way. And in a big company, it's horribly hard because we had to do that so many times. And, you know, and employees are like, well, we've been doing it this way for, you know, 10 years. Why do you want to change it now? And it was something that was supposed to have been done 10 years ago. So,
exactly.
yeah, so undoing that stuff and redoing it is so much harder. But like I said, a big company can afford to do that. Small companies is if you have to start from scratch and you've been in business for 5, 6, 7 years and now you have to go back and set an employee policy or you know, get your paperwork straight or, you know, have your paperwork a certain way, then those are things that can really be detrimental to your business if you're a
mm-hmm.
small business.
Because it's time-consuming and
mm-hmm.
you have to make sure everything is correct when you're getting ready to do it.
Exactly.
So that you don't have to keep going back. And another
yeah.
thing, too, you were saying about big companies, a lot of changes that happen, a lot of employees are not good with change when you've been doing something the same way for like 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, a policy comes down, a regulation comes down, and now we have to change it.
Yeah.
Sometimes big organizations don't know how to prepare their people for that change.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about it.
How would you deal with that when it comes to even on the bigger scale and then on the smaller scale? How would you handle that?
Yeah, so I had to deal with it so much. That was one of the biggest headaches that I had when I was working at Best Buy was, you know, things that would come down and, you know, as a leader, I'm like, you know, I know my employees are going to have a fit about this. And, but, you know, when you're in middle management, you have to toe the line or you're not a team player, you know.
So exactly.
It was, you know, I spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I had a little background noise and I didn't hear anything. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Well, you want me to interrupt you every time you talk? I'll keep interrupting
no.
you.
Oh, so I spent a lot of time doing damage control and, you know, and things like that. So, we used to always have a joke, you know, that things look good on paper, but in implementation, they aren't always going to work. Just because it looks good when you wrote it down as a new process does not mean that when people actually start doing it, that it's going to work. So, that was a tough, really, really tough thing to deal with. There were a couple of times where we were allowed to innovate on our own or come up with, you know, new ideas on our own where we could get our employees involved. And those were the things that were always successful. when we got the employees involved, you tell the employee what the problem is. So, and this is the advice that I give to small businesses. Tell the employees what the problem is. So if the problem is, you know, you're not generating enough revenue or you're not attracting enough sales or whatever the problem, you know, you're not producing enough to be able to meet customer demand, whatever the issue is, talk to the employees about it. And you'll be surprised that, especially if you're used to talking to your employees. Now, if you never talk to your employees and all of a sudden you're asking them questions about stuff, then they're kind of looking at you sideways saying, okay, well, what is this about? You know, what are you trying to get out of me or whatever. But so you need to talk to your employees on a regular basis anyway. But, excuse me, but when you're facing problems, let your employees know what the problems are, because you'll be surprised at what they, how their bills will start turning and coming up with ideas to solve the problems. Or how they'll tell you about something, you know, well, you guys have us doing such and such a procedure, and that wastes, you know, that wastes 20 minutes a day. If we cut this out, if it's not necessary, then we could, you know, we could produce more, or we could, you know, we could get more sales or something like that. And you, and when you ask those questions, be thick-skinned enough to hear the answer, because all the time you're not going to necessarily hear what you want to hear, or, you know, it's not necessarily going to be pretty. And then the other thing is, if you bother to ask your employees for their ideas and their opinions, do something about it. Nothing hurts morale more than asking for a whole bunch of ideas and then the employee never hears anything about it, never hears. If it can get done, then let them know that, it, you know, this is a timetable for it to get done. If it's something that's just not feasible, then let them know why it's not feasible. You know, thank you for the idea. It was a great idea, but, you know, at this point we can't do it because of this, that, and the other. But the bottom line is getting your employees involved, the people who actually do the work, imagine that. Get those people involved, and they'll usually come up with the ideas for you.
And you know what? It's amazing that you said that, because a lot of companies – don't get the employees involved in that. The thing is, why don't you want them involved? Because they have to put an investment in why, and that gives them a motivation to want to stay with you. Because now people, even though jobs, according to what the media says, that jobs are scarce, which I don't really believe that, but they say jobs are scarce, but people are making decisions to just walk away now. You know, they're fed up with the red tape, they're fed up with all the politics that go into working for certain corporations, and they say, look, I can do this for myself. I'm out of here. They walk away because of some of it is dissatisfaction because, you know, like you said, you ask me my idea, I tell you, I get involved because that's what they want you to do. That's one of the invisible things they say they want you to do is to get involved. We want to hear your ideals. But yet and still you don't even come back to me and say whether or not you used my idea. You know, or was my ideal – and I have had it. Did you like my idea? Yeah, but we could use it. Okay, so why didn't you tell me that? Because I'm sitting here thinking that you – you know, that you actually liked it and y'all work, you putting something together to work on it to make it happen. But you're not.
And so it's frustrating.
It's a demotivation. And you wonder why people walk around with their lips poked out. Well, because you claim, because you know what? The company policy, the big heads say this is what we want you to do. You need to get your employees more involved. Okay, so what do you want me to do? We're going to give you these programs we want you to implement to get the employees more involved. Okay, they implement the program, but nothing happens after the implementation, after they sit up in classes and seminars and conferences, and still nothing happens with the ideals that they come together with.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
And the other, because of the, so, you know, for your question that you originally asked, you know, with the pitfalls with companies. So to me, the first pitfall is not getting your employees involved. But the second one is not following up when you got them involved. Because now, you know, you defeated the purpose and you probably made them angrier or, you know, more disenfranchised than when you first started. And so follow up is hugely important. And that's, like I was saying, from a culture standpoint and from having a huge company, if you don't bother to follow up on the directives that you send out, so if you choose to, you know, send out something, a new policy or something like that without getting employees involved, which a lot of companies do, you know,
yeah.
that's one way to handle it. But at least still follow up to find out if that, if those things are being implemented.
Exactly.
And that doesn't happen the way it should.
And you're right. And another thing, too, is employers don't make employees feel like they belong. They're not,
yeah.
they're part of the team. They
yeah.
want you to work in the mindset that you're part of a team, but you don't make me feel that way. Why don't you make me feel that way?
Yeah. You know? That is, yeah, that's a huge problem, too. And one of the things that I did, and I write about this in the book, too, or did I put this in my blog? But I know I wrote about it. But is what we used to do, and I actually learned this from one of my boss's bosses, is what they call the skip level. So you do the one-on-ones with your employees that report directly to you, and that's for their development and, you know, and to help them out. But then when I did it with my managers, it was also to find out the status of their departments, what things were going on, what issues were they seeing, what challenges were they facing. And then I would do a skip level, what we call the skip level, because it was a level between my managers that reported to me and their reports, which who were supervisor levels. And so I would sit down once every 3 months with the actual supervisors of the department and, you know, develop a relationship with them, and then also to check up on what my managers were telling me was going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't just take, you know, it's that trust but verify thing. And so
mm-hmm.
I didn't just take people's word for what they said was happening in their department. And then I took
mm-hmm.
it a step further. And again, like
mm-hmm.
I said, I learned this from one of my boss's bosses. I did roundtables with the employees. So I had too many employees to, you know, sit down one-on-one with them, but I would bring them in groups at a time to, you know, to air out issues and find out things that were going on to make sure that what the supervisors and the managers were telling me was going
mm-hmm.
on happened. And, you know, and in a big company, it's hard to do it on a regular basis. So with those, I probably only did, you know, maybe twice a year or something like that. But, But in the meantime, I walked around and talked to my employees, or I did ride-alongs because I had employees that were in trust and things like that. I actually spent time talking to them, even if it was, you know, a two-minute conversation, just to make sure that they knew that just because there was a supervisor and a manager in between them and me didn't mean that they couldn't just come and talk to me when they wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, helped. You know, I got feedback that you know, that made people feel like they were actually part of the team, and that if, you know, I definitely believe in following the chain of command. So if somebody came to me directly about something, the
mm-hmm.
first question I would ask was, well, did you talk to your supervisor about it, or did you talk to your manager about it? And if they said
mm-hmm.
no, I would send them to the supervisor or the manager first. If they
mm-hmm.
said, yeah, I talked to him and he never did anything, then I would handle it from that point.
Mm-hmm.
But I've
mm-hmm.
always, and even though the situation itself, you know, probably angered me a little bit because I, you know, I'm like, well, what is the manager doing that this isn't resolved yet? But it still
yeah.
made me feel good that the employee felt comfortable enough with me to come and talk
mm-hmm.
to me directly.
Exactly, exactly. And you want to have them that where they can come talk to you, if nothing else. Even though you do believe in the chain of command, at least they know somebody would at least listen. Even if they didn't, you know, use their chain of command, there's somebody there that would listen,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that you
yeah.
don't always have that. You know, I'm too
right.
busy. I got this to do. My nose is up in the air because I have to hold this position, and I have to do this, and I have to do that. And you make the employee feel so not worthy.
Yeah,
know?
Exactly. And the bottom line, when you're in a leadership position, your job is to support your employees. That's how I always looked at my job when I was at Best Buy is, what am I doing to make my employees' jobs easier?
Easy.
You know,
I had
tons of meetings, and I had to travel a lot, but when I wasn't mm-hmm. traveling, I was in the building walking around talking to the employees. And it was important to me that they felt heard. You know, and everybody, and sometimes, you know, I'd have a one-on-one conversation with somebody who came to me with, you know, something they were angry about, and I would have to tell them, okay, well, this is the policy or this is the way it's going to be. I'm sorry that you don't like it, but we're going to have
mm-hmm.
to agree to disagree in this particular situation because it's not going to change. But
mm-hmm.
at least they still felt heard they may not have gotten what they wanted out of it, and I did my best to explain, you know, why it couldn't happen. But but at least they were heard.
And that's what they need. They need that. Another thing too, when it comes to our employees, whether you're big or small, you need to have somebody that they can go to. They need to have that go-to person, no matter what.
Yep.
Sometimes we get in the leadership position and we're leaders. You know, we don't see the ship. We just see the leader. And we take and run with it, and our head is so far up our butts, and I'll say like that, that, you know, oh, how dare you waste my time talking to me? Just do your job. You know, people say, just do your job. But hold up. And I've always said this, and this has always been my philosophy. You can't ask me to give you 100% when you're only giving me 10 as the employee.
That is a great quote. I bet.
You can have it. I won't charge you for it. You can have it. But, no, I always say that. That's always been me. You ask 100% out of me because that's what we do. I want 100% out of you. You do it, but what you give me. You don't give me 10%. So why should you get 100 out of me?
Yep.
And you have to take that. You have to take the worth of the employee and look at how much you're worth to your boss. How does he
treat
you?
That's so true. Yep. That is so true.
And if you don't want him to treat you that way, why would you treat me like that?
Exactly. Yeah.
So,
and you know,
go ahead.
Have you ever heard that? Have you ever heard the quote that, you know, people don't leave companies, they leave people?
Yes.
And that is so true. It's, you know, you're usually, if you have a mass exodus, or, you know, you're losing people every, you know, every couple months and things like that, you need to look at the leader of that department, because that's likely the problem.
Exactly. You are so right. But some companies, I'm going to be honest with you, some companies, you can have only nobody left but the supervisor. They ain't going to get rid of that supervisor.
Of leadership, and you know, you may, you know, you and everybody has leadership capabilities within them, but it, you know, they manifest themselves in different ways. So you know, you may be a good leader in your community, but you know, you may not be a good leader in the business. So it's about knowing yourself and figuring out what works best for you, and continually developing your skills too, because just because you get into a position of authority does not mean you know everything. You should be willing to continue to learn.
Exactly. Man, Madison, we've almost run out of time. This is so awesome. I love it. So what I want you to do for my listening audience, tell us on your website real quick, and give us some numbers if we wanted to call you to consult us. Go ahead.
Most definitely. So my my consulting website is A.R. Patterson Consulting, so A as in Aisha, R as in Robert, PattersonConsulting.com.
Okay.
And then my business number is area code 219-381-6479. And I have if someone is actually interested in receiving a consultation, then I have a form on my website that they can fill out to give me a little more information about, because I do a 60-minute complimentary consultation to see if we can work together.
Oh, awesome. I am definitely going to put your website on my page and on my Facebook page.
Oh, great. Okay. Thank you so much. And don't forget, my book is coming out this spring, The Subtle Shark.
The Subtle Shark, right?
Yes.
Okay. And it's coming out when?
It'll be out this spring. I'm putting the finishing touches on it, so it's pretty soon.
Okay, then thank you very much. I want to thank you for coming on the show. Have a happy Easter. Be safe. And I will definitely be calling you again. I might need your services.
Well, thank you so much for having me on, Salita. It was a blast. I really appreciate it.
I loved it. Okay, then. Bye-bye, sweetie.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
This has been another episode of Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Salita. We want to thank you for listening in and stay tuned for more.